Attack Zone, episode 12, on the front line. Hello, Dice fans. You have stepped once again into the Attack Zone, bringing you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. Each week, we're bringing you topics that we choose to put forward so that we can share our strengths for one another's improvement and bring attention to our weaknesses so that we can learn to address them. I am Dave, and joining me on the line once again is actual mad scientist, JT. JT, how's your night going, sir?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. My gosh, beautiful fall day today. I went outside, spent a lot of time washing, waxing the cars, and just loving it. This is my favorite season that just started, and today was gorgeous, and I love these chilly nights and everything. I love it.
Yep, I gotta agree. It was beautiful today.
Got some apple cider yesterday, so been chugging that. Oh, perfect.
Apple cider.
One of my favorite things about fall is apple cider.
Are you a pumpkin spice guy?
Not so much. Some things, yeah. I mean, I like pumpkin pie itself, and some things are pretty good. If you called it a pumpkin spice milkshake, I'd say eh. But if it was a pumpkin pie milkshake, I'd be totally on board, even though they might be actually the same thing. So I guess there's the aesthetic there. I'm much more of an apple guy, and actually, funny story about that, since you kind of sent me on this tangent. Several years ago, Starbucks had a drink they called their caramel apple cider. Do you remember that, JT?
No.
Well, it existed. It doesn't anymore. It was called caramel apple cider, and I ordered it, and I watched them make it, and they go into a fridge, and they pull out apple juice. And I said, wait a minute. This is called caramel apple cider. Yeah. So that's apple juice. And they said, yeah. Well, apple juice, they said, is just apple cider, apple cider, they said, is just apple juice with some spices in it. And I said, no, not even close. You put the apple through a cider press and you do all, come on. So I wrote an email to Starbucks corporate complaining about it. And I'm going to take credit that next year when the drink came back in season, it was called caramel apple spice.
Wow.
Yep. So, in my mind, I made Starbucks change theirs.
Mm.
I love the fall. How about you? Are you a pumpkin spice guy? Not so basic.
Well, no, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to lose my mind one way or the other on it.
Nah. No, it's just the colors, the season, some of my favorite, some stuff I get to wear. I get to break out, the flannel. The plaid and crap.
Flannel's good.
It's a great season. I love it. Randy is not with us tonight because he is feeling a little under the weather, but he sends along his greetings to everyone listening, I'm sure. He loves the fall because it means he can start wearing beanies again.
Yep.
If he could justify wearing beanies every day for the entire year.
For the next 7 months, he'll be wearing one every day.
100%. Yep. All right, but you're not here to hear us talk about the fall and all of that kind of stuff. You're here to hear us talk about Dice Masters. Maybe, we assume, we're not sure, but we figure it's a safe assumption. So before moving into today's topic, I'd like to remind everyone, if you like this show, please give us a review on iTunes and now Google Play. We're listed on their podcast directory now, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago. Reviews are going to help others find the show. We don't advertise at all. Everything is word of mouth, and we'd love to give you guys props for a review here. We also appreciated some strong feedback to a couple of six-packs that we've done recently, earlier with John, and then, of course, with Civil War. That's something that we'd like to look into doing regularly again, given that John and Shadowmelt have done their Pick Pass Wheel segment, which is really, really cool way they're doing that. So we won't be stepping on their toes. So we're looking into some things with that. But today, I do want to acknowledge DJC Anonmi, or maybe DJ Canon Me, I don't know. Whatever your name is, however you say it, thank you for the 5-star review on iTunes. We greatly appreciate that. Glad that we're giving you something that you find useful. All right, then. Our topic today is looking at a really kind of a fun team that also finished second at the PDC event in Toledo. And this is a team that centers around the basic action card, the front line. JT, you had the opportunity to play against this team in the first round of top eight, and unfortunately, it ultimately bested you, correct?
Yep. Yeah, so I Rob Drosty is the guy who was running it. He's from Detroit.
Super nice guy.
Super nice guy. Yeah, tons of fun to hang out with. I met him at the first WKO up there, and then ran into him again at U.S. Nationals, hung out a little bit there, and then played him at the PDC Regional. But, yeah, so Drosty sits down across from me, and I was like, what are you running? And he just says, shenanigans, just shenanigans.
Hey, he's using our word. That's our word.
And I, you know, I kind of took a gander at it, and we had a quick question about...
Batcave.
Batcave, yeah.
Yeah.
Took a couple minutes to get that sorted out. Just the combo does the super rare Batcave, which reads, continuous once per turn. During your turn, you may purchase a basic action die for one less than its printed cost and put it under this die. You can send this die to the use pile to add the dice under it to your prep area. So the question was, can you combine that discount with either Thousand Dragon or Red Dragon? We just wanted to have that clear before we started. And the ruling was that you could not. Wasn't going to matter, not in the least in our game, but wanted to have that clear before we started. And so Drosty won the roll to go first and proceeded to just lambaste me in, I think that game lasted four turns.
Games all day that he was playing with his team just went very quick. And at one point on the, if you guys were watching the stream out there, or if you go back and watch the VOD from the, from that particular, event, you'll hear Joel and I talking about, oh, wait, you know, this game's over or whatever else. Like we look up and something like game one's done for you guys. And that was happening all day. He was on stream at one point and the game was just, you know, that fast and just all day. But, that Batcave question, I know some phone calls were made. We were looking at that. We actually delayed the start of the top eight so that everybody would be kind of back in place. Cause Joel was occupied trying to make sure that he did the best ruling on that particular card that he could, before hopping back over to, get the stream going and start the game that we were running. We're talking about it, particularly for that reason. It's a pretty fun team. It involves some of our favorite kind of shenanigans. JT, I think that there's at least a little part of you that likes teams like this, right? Otherwise, you would not have, in concert with Randy, devised and then used the Phoenix Fastball team at Gen Con, right?
Oh, I love combos like this. I love anytime like. You get to put something together and you know, kind of excites you that the potential of the possibility is there that this combo can go off. And does that really happen the way we think it happens? Anytime there's any of that, I get a little bit excited. You know, whether it's the Phoenix Fastball or, you know, turn three, the best there is, or whatever, like all that stuff. It's all fun to me. So, kudos to the guys that brewed this up. I know Drosty said that, Tony Weakland had helped him out a little bit. And, you know, I don't know who else contributed. I don't mean to leave anyone out. I just know that, you know, when they came down and ran it and it's fun. It's interesting. It really is shenanigans. That's absolutely what it was.
If you talk like Timmy, Johnny, Spike, it's a very Timmy team, but it's a Timmy team that can win. Stompy craziness. All right, so let's talk about this. We'll try and make sure that we have a link to the deck list up on the post on our reserve pool posting of it. I don't know if you'll be able to follow it in the app, but we'll certainly put it there as well in the podcasting app with the RSS feed. Let's run through the team so you understand what's on it here. First off, we'll start with basic action cards, even though usually those are saved for last. We have the Front Line from Civil War. This is where your unblocked attacking character dice gain plus 3 attack until the end of turn. And then it has that global where you pay a fist, and an opposing character die can't block this turn unless your opponent pays 1 life. So, again, very much like Relentless, except avoidable. Then we have Blessing, which gives each of your characters +1/+1. And then on its double burst phase, 2 of your characters get an additional +1/+1. So those are the basic actions. The Front Line is really where this shines, both with the global and then, of course, the punishing +3 attack that you're giving. We'll note here, too, that this team pretty much is entirely predicated on sidekicks, right? This is like extreme flying sidekicks in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea is that you end up fielding as many sidekicks as you can and give them as much plus attack as you can to pull the win.
Absolutely. So let's continue to go through it. We have a lot of global abilities here. We have Thousand Dragon, Noxious Nostril, Gust. That global is pay a bolt. The next action die you buy this turn costs 2 less energy. Silver Surfer Sky Rider, the rare. We know his global, pay a shield, take 2 damage, draw a die, and put it in prep. We have Ring, Lesser Gear, from Faerun Under Siege. Pay 1. You get to manipulate the NPC die from the sidekick die, rather, from your used pile. So free sidekick fielding there, or energy if you really need it. You have Red Dragon. I believe he ran lesser, though you could either one. It wouldn't matter, or any of the three, as long as it has the global. We have pay a bolt. The action die costs 2 less, and you deal a damage to your opponent. Professor X Trainer. You could use recruiting young mutants, too. We all know what that one does. I have to imagine he went with Trainer over recruiting young mutants so that if there was, like, a gun to his head and somebody said, you have to buy a Professor X, at least this one buffs sidekicks. It probably doesn't matter. Parallax with the re-rolling global. Doom Caliber Knight with the uncommon there with the pay fist. When you attack, your monsters cannot be the target of action dice or card abilities. And then, of course, the Bat Cave that we talked about at the top of this. So every single thing here is geared towards either getting sidekicks moving around or discounting your basic actions. It's just, it's kind of absurd, but it's also kind of spectacular.
Yeah. I mean, it's, he sat down with 8 dice on his team. So he had, you know, the basic action dice, sure. But just 1 die on each card. Mm-hmm. And I alluded to the way that our, top 8 match went, you know, that, very, very quickly that first game was over. He was able to get a big swing, got me down to 1, and then Red Dragon the next turn. When I saw exactly how it played, I didn't make any bones about it. When I went first game 2, I went after his strategy, just like you can do in Vicious Struggle. And I was able to get the win doing that. And then game 3, he missed some rolls and went a little bit long, and we're both kind of angling for that that front line win, and we each got some damage in, but ultimately he just made a super great move. He bought one of my imprisons, which I wasn't initially too worried about, because he was only able to imprison a couple sidekicks, but the brilliant move here was that he parallaxed imprisoned off into his reserve pool and then parallaxed it back on and took, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 more sidekicks when he swung.
Well, that is high risk, high reward.
Yeah. I had the energy for it and you know, hit the other actions, or maybe he needed to parallax them too. It doesn't really matter, but just a very, 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 very sharp play. But that's kind of what this team is going for. It's going to be a little bit role dependent, kind of like Vicious Struggle, where you just need those actions to hit. The energy really does you no good. And I mean, that's what it is. It's, I yep. gotta get those actions, and then I've got to get the sidekicks and the actions, and then I'm going to win.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. 100%. And I want to go back then also to the point you alluded to in your game too. Like you said, just with Vicious Struggle, just as with other teams we've talked about, like Phoenix Fastball and some others in the past, this is one of those teams where you basically bring everything with you for your opponent to win as well. It doesn't mean you have to hope that you go first in every game, though, against somebody like yourself who can like look at this and understand it and then take it and try and do the same thing yourself. Maybe you need to hope that a little more. But against a lot of people, they can try and go after it, but you're going to know it better than them. I mean, not a lot of people are used to sitting down across from a team that just has one die on each card except for the basic actions. Yeah. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
And a lot of people are going to kind of cock their head to the side and, what? Huh? And, you know, it's going to happen. They're going to get beat, and they're not going to totally understand why.
Yeah.
And even in Swiss, I mean, this is really designed for Swiss. Because going first or going second, your opponent's not going to have the opportunity to understand what just happened to them. But, you know, they're just going to lose.
Yeah. And, I mean, honestly, the time we spent tinkering around getting an answer for Batcave, I should have spent looking at it and trying to figure it out. It became very obvious when turn one, he Red Dragon, then Thousand Dragon, then bought the front line. I thought, okay, that the whole game rests on this. Mm-hmm. It's going to rest on how many sidekicks he rolls turn three. And I thought, okay, well, you know, if he happens to miss, you know, I should be able to control the game from there. And I just, to be frank with you, I just didn't stand a chance. It was just too fast.
Yeah. Yeah, because it can still get, plenty of sidekicks out thanks to Ring, for one. I mean, that itself is a key element there. And then it can reroll whatever it needs thanks to Parallax. Now, granted, again, the opponent can do that as well, but it's very easy to catch you unawares. And it's counting on that one game model of Swiss, I think, in a lot of different ways here. So the win condition here is obviously the front line. What all got purchased in that third game that went a little bit longer? What did he take from his team other than that? Like, did Blessing get bought, for example? Where else did the team go in a longer game? Because it seems to me that you got eight sidekicks and you got an action die. Eventually, you're going to need some fists for a front line. You're going to need some other things, like, to not quote-unquote deck yourself or bag yourself. I'm not sure if we've ever come up with a good name for it when you don't have enough dice to draw in your bag. How did it go when it went longer?
All actions. I don't think there was anything else purchased but actions.
Blessing and Frontline.
Blessing's great because then his blocked sidekicks stay in the field, right, because they've gotten a defense boost now. But Blessing in front line, I mean, that's the whole game. Because you've brought six of those actions, you can just continue to buy those dice, and eventually you're going to roll the action faces, right? So field the sidekicks anytime you get a chance. Typically the only time you can really use Ring, if you're able to maintain full ramp, is turn two. And so I think that's why he went for the front line straight away, instead of going, you know, the cheaper action first and then the more expensive. I think he went front line first. So now there's two dice, there's two sidekicks in the used pile. And so when you roll six, going, you know, turn two, you can either energy fix for a mask, or you can use the Ring Global for a sidekick, depending on how you roll. But you really only need a bolt and another energy to pick up Blessing, right? Because you'll use Red Dragon. And then ideally, three masks gives you full ramp, and then you've got one to play with. So if you roll a sidekick, you can, and three masks, that's great. You can energy fix or not. It really doesn't matter at that point. But if you've missed that sidekick or you missed a mask, you can fix that second turn with a little bit more margin. And then if you happen to land the sidekick when you do full ramp, you actually have an energy to spare, so you lose a life, but that gives you a free parallax, essentially, that turn three to pick up some extra sidekicks or the action face you might have missed. And so it's very just super efficient. You know, there are some things that slow it down, obviously, some, you know, control elements like Oracle, probably. I'm not even sure that Jinzo would slow it down because...
life is a resource.
You're going to get your life is a resource. Yeah. And, you know, if you can get, you know, four or five sidekicks and get them buffed to each do, you know, five plus damage, that's it.
Good game. And honestly, yeah, you're in a bad spot anyway. You're paying life to say, okay, well, this can block. Or whatever else. I mean, eventually you're going to get got one way or another. You have Red Dragon whittling away your life as some action dice get bought. You have maybe you're trying to pay some life to be able to block with the front line and whatever else. But eventually, there's going to be a lot of sidekicks. Two, he has the means to get more sidekicks out, so he's not too concerned with letting one or two chip through. And four, it's just going to be faster because meantime, you're probably doing your regular plan. You're buying some characters or whatever else. And I think that's what happened to a lot of people that day. They sat down, shook hands, and each went with their plan. It just so happened that Robert's was such a darn fast plan.
Yeah.
We basically have every like popular ramp slash discounting global that you could get here. I mean, you don't have Resurrection strictly, but Silver Surfer does that same kind of thing. You don't, you know, Professor X, Red Dragon, Thousand Dragon. I mean, geez, the only thing you're really missing, I think, is Blue Eyes White Dragon. You know, at least at the time of the release. Of course, this was before we had Green Arrow Flash, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So let's just look at it in a frame that we've talked about before on here, that SWOT analysis, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I would say under strengths, the first thing that it does very, very well is it very, very quick games. You're going to be at a good spot in a tournament if, you know, when it comes to top eight and you've qualified, you've played like two or three less hours of Dice Masters than the other people in the room. That can certainly be a benefit. So these fast games is absolutely a strength of the team itself, even though it doesn't have anything to do with the structure of the team. What else is particularly strong about this? I mean,
I was just going to comment on those fast games. You know, when I was playing at the WKO down at Tribby Store, this past spring, that's the store that I took the best there is team to.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those games were over in three turns. I can tell you that even though I made a mistake in the top eight, like it was, I just felt so fresh at the end of the day, versus some of those other long days that we've had playing Dice Masters.
Yep.
You know, and I've talked with you and Randy about this. Like I feel like I can go into those days and know that even if it's a grind, that's probably an advantage for me. Like, as that time goes on, I feel like I've had days where I've really been prepared for that. And not everyone is, but,
right.
But this, to know that, nope, I'm just going to be fresh every game. I'm going to play for 6 minutes and then have basically a half an hour before I need to do anything else. you're so fresh and so loose. That is a really, that's a really huge advantage. You know, I think, the fact that it can negate completely that Doom Caliber Knight global is really huge. Obviously, it had no impact in my match with Drosty, but That's only because I didn't bring distraction, right? If, you know, anytime you can completely nullify one of your opponent's cards, that gives you a 10-9 advantage. Because it's just it's a moot point. It is as if it's not even there. And anytime there's something like that, it's a huge advantage. So,
right. It's just, I'm almost in awe looking at it. I mean, it's just so fast. But let's go into the weakness side of it. Obvious drawback is that everything your opponent needs to beat you is right there. I mean, you can buy the same basic actions right there. If for some reason Batcave was needed, that's the only piece that you can't, you know, go across and grab. Everything else is global ability. I mean, 7 of the 8 cards that make up the non-basic action portion of the team have global abilities on them. So, I mean, the obvious weakness here is that pretty much anybody can sit down across from you and do exactly what you're doing.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, that's...
And do it just about as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. And so the game 2 of that match against Drosty, that's exactly what I did. Two can play this game. We'll see how game 3 works itself out. That's exactly how it went. And, you know, it's the same thing. You mentioned this earlier, but it's the same thing as the Phoenix Fastball and whatever else. When your win condition is globals and basic actions, then you provide your win condition for your opponent.
Right. And in multiple cases now, what we have seen with these kind of teams, with you, your success with Phoenix Fastball at Gen Con in 2015, and of course, Drosty here, people can do that, but that doesn't mean that they're going to. It's not easy to look at something so janky and say, oh yeah, I can just do that same thing. It's not easy to it's not easy to identify that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And even, you know, I'll go back, my game with Jimmy, like, and a couple other people at Gen Con, like, they saw what I was doing, and so they decided to buy the infiltrates, and I thought, uh-oh, here it comes, they're going to use it, and no one ever did. So even, you know, even in the middle of being able to identify, I need to get these away from my opponent, you know, because it was just so foreign and no one had done it, like, because they didn't see that potential for their own team, even though they got halfway there and bought it, you know, they still didn't use it to its full potential for them to win. So even if someone was able to, you know, buy away the front lines, they might re-roll sidekicks to energy to try and buy the characters that they would normally buy when running their team normally. So,
Right. They're thinking, hey, the front line is important. The front line is very important to this team, so I need to make sure that they don't have it. And then, so fine, they buy a front line. Maybe they buy 2 front lines, and then they don't know what to do with it. Like, they have half of the answer there, but they don't have the full thing. You know, it's funny to me, we're on the weaknesses part, but I feel like we're in a bad job interview. Well, my weaknesses are actually strengths.
Yeah.
You know, I work too hard, I care too much. But yeah, I mean, you can't take away the fact that absolutely your opponent can just do the exact same thing. Now, and to their credit, we know this from Tony talking on the stream, on the chat on Twitch, that they knew. They knew that that was the kind of team that it was going to be. And certainly when you and Randy were working on Phoenix Fastball, you knew that that was the kind of team that it was going to be.
No.
But you don't care.
No,
you didn't think that?
I realized it mid-match.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're just so excited about it. Like,
right.
We were two little fanboys.
You found a cool combo.
It happened the moment I was playing someone who first bought Infiltrate. And I think, looking back on it, I think Jimmy was the first person to buy Infiltrate against me. And I sat there and I thought, uh-oh, crap. Because he was playing the Uncommon Wasp from AOU. That pumps with globals, and then he was just using a ton of globals, and so I thought, oh no, he's gonna give Wasp the Phoenix Force affiliation, pump it up, and then pump it one more time using Colossus's global and double it, and I'm gonna be toast.
Right. And just didn't shake out that way.
Yeah, so that's when I realized it. So it was actually mid-match. It wasn't at all when we were brewing it up.
No kidding. Well, then, still, to their credit, Tony said on stream that they knew that it was going to be that kind of a team. But you go in, like we were just talking, figuring, we're going to catch some people unaware. So let's do it. And, boy, they certainly did. Well, I'll point out here, notice that this team doesn't even come... It doesn't sniff at Bard, Oracle, Elf Thief, Vicious Struggle. And none of those cards are in there. Lantern Ring, none of those cards are in there. And it took second at a pretty sizable event. It was certainly as well-populated as many official WizKids events that I've been to. Had people traveling, you know, us from Ohio and Western PA. We had a guy from Chicago out there, some folks from Indiana, Detroit. Pretty strong regional scene in this area, and yeah, it just so happens that it's one of those teams that if you look at it, you can do that. All right, opportunities. What do you want your opponent to do when you sit down across from them? Pretty much the only thing I think that you care is that your opponent kind of goes about their business and does what they think their plan is.
That's exactly right. I mean you're happy if you see distraction just because you know it's a dead card. Mm-hmm. You're happy if you see Blink because, you know, you can buy it and provide additional chip damage. Right, because then your unblocked mm-hmm. characters get +3 and your blocked characters are going to deal damage anyway. I would say...
Cloud Kill. You're happy to see that.
Yeah, certainly anything that manipulates blockers that way.
Yeah.
You know... Hulk out, why not? Because Hulk out in this case is probably going to be the same as Blink, because you give +1 with Blessing and then provide Overcrush and maybe an additional +1. Obviously the front line bonus doesn't get applied there, but you know, those kind of things I think you're happy about. The biggest thing, though, is the first thing you said, is that if your opponent goes on with their business like everything is normal,
you're thrilled.
Yeah, because you're going to blindside them.
Yeah, just go about your plan, and I'm happy. I guess you figure, too, like you said, basically have any global, or not global, rather, but any basic action that could possibly... aid this team, because it's not like it's hunting for ways to buy basic actions. It can just do that, and then it doesn't have to worry so much about it. It can get all its sidekick dice in the field and worry about the basic action cards or dice that it's purchased, especially if there are some useful ones on the other side of the table to fuel the parallax or whatever else, or to just find the proper solution to winning. And that's pretty crazy too. Threats, though, and I think we saw this in the match that it lost, ultimately coming runner-up in the event. You know, it felt a Venom. Venom is definitely a card that would hurt this team. You have to be able to get Venom out, but at the same time, that Venom team was getting Venom out very quickly. And, of course, we're talking about Angelo Fortunato, which gives non-fist characters -2/-2. So that's pretty much just going to wipe this board. And it's not set to buy any characters. I mean, even if it wanted to, the cheapest character that it has is 5.
Yeah.
So you're kind of sunk there. And that character wouldn't even help you, right? Because Professor X gives the sidekicks +1/+1. They're still going to get knocked out to Venom.
Yeah.
So that would probably be the biggest threat. I suppose Dr. Doom, in a similar way, would give a threat, though that has yet to be seen in any significant sense in the meta, so I don't think you have to worry about him. But Venom Angelo Fortunato is probably the most relevant card that you would be likely to see that would just take this team apart, and ultimately did beat the team.
Yeah, the other two things that I think would... cause some headache. Number one is the OP Crow. right?
Yep.
Because then you'd have to buy two blessings or a blessing and a Professor X in order to be able to attack. So it really just slows it down a little bit. The other one is, I think it's Black Widow, Mistress of Pain. I think that's the subtitle. It's the one that can block any number of characters with a fielding cost of zero. So,
yep.
It's just going to block sidekicks for days. And there's really no, there's no text removal. There's no, direct character removal on the team. So, both of those things could cause problems, straight on. At least, talking about the way things were, at the time of the tournament. Of course, now, I think we have to add the rare Dr. Light to that mix, right? Because while she's active, opposing sidekicks deal you no damage. So that would be another piece to throw at this and just kind of say, well, that there goes that idea.
Right, and certainly that Dr. Light hurts multiple different kinds of decks. Bard teams have other characters out in the field, but they're often counting on being able to count that sidekick and do damage with that sidekick to be able to win. So, and Dr. Light wouldn't negate that. If you had any thought of flying sidekicks coming back in any way, shape, or form as a new set comes out, again, Dr. Light kind of puts the kibosh on that as well, and very, very affordable card. So you're spot on. New cards, just, they hurt it. They absolutely do. But let's move then on to this question. Is there anything that it could possibly bring that would give it an answer to Venom?
Yeah, I think a couple things, actually. If we were retooling this right now, I would probably drop, as useful as it is, especially if you were able to get to it, I would probably drop Red Dragon and put in its place either Spray or Kryptonite.
Let me ask you this. Why Red Dragon and not Thousand Dragon?
Because the chip damage is really only incidental. And the Thousand Dragon being able to go Thousand Dragon, Thousand Dragon, I'm going to buy my 5 cost turn 1 and steal Professor X.
Fair enough.
Because, let's just say you go first and your opponent looks like they're going about their business. Well, they're probably not going to field sidekicks turn 2 unless they have to. So you, not only did you go first, but you went big for the front line. So turn 2, you can field a sidekick using a ring or let's just say you roll it. You can buy another front line. And now you only need 3 sidekicks if you get both front lines.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would go away if I'm just, again, kind of off the cuff a little bit, but if we're retooling, I would rather have Kryptonite or Spray to nullify a threat than Red Dragon to get maybe 1 damage per turn. Just kind of chipping. The other thing I would do, Drosty owned this immediately, like the Batcave really doesn't help. It helped in another version that he was running prior to this. As they're building the team, Batcave was on it. They made some changes. Batcave stayed on it. But I would probably drop Batcave for, I think it's the Uncommon Falcon from UXM. Right, that when he
that's
attacks,
him. Yep.
Your
that's the flying sidekick guy.
Yeah, so let's force my sidekicks to be unblocked. That way, they're all doing 4 damage minimum, and that that bypasses Mistress of Pain, but it doesn't get past
Venom.
Well, it doesn't get past Venom, but now I've got a way to get past Venom, right? Falcon's unaffected by Venom.
Right.
It doesn't get past OP Crow, but I've got a way to do that. I just buy another, blessing or whatever. it doesn't get past Dr. Light, but okay, well, you know, either spray or kryptonite can handle that. So
I think those are two good changes, yeah.
Those are two, you know, I talked to Drosty a little bit about why blessing, because one of my favorite basic actions is heroic defense.
Yes, you love that card.
It's so good. It's so broken for its cost.
Let me just point out three costs. Your characters get +1/+1 for each of your character dice knocked out this turn. Gain life equal to that die's level. The big thing is that it's +1/+1 to everything.
The life gain.
So does blessing, but the life gain. Yeah,
you'd be shocked at how cool that life gain ends up being in draft, where you're just like, you know, your opponent attacks or something. Yeah, let it through. And you're like, you're going to take the 6, you know, whatever it happens to be. Yeah, that's fine. And then on your next turn, you pop heroic defense and 2 or 3 characters get knocked out and you just gain 7 life. It's so, It's so ridiculous. It's so silly. It's goofy. I would probably run heroic defense. There's nothing wrong with blessing. The extra +1s are really, really cool. I would probably run heroic defense.
Right. So on a team full of globals with a set like, of course, Green Arrow Flash coming out that brings some pretty intriguing globals to the table itself, it's worth looking at, could any of these fit in here? I guess there are a couple of obvious places to look. The first being Rip Hunter's Chalkboard. It can ensure that you get that action die right when you need it. I don't know that it matters, but that's one option.
Yeah, I think I think the Surfer Global is plenty.
Yes.
Because really, you want to make sure that you get both actions, whether that's two front lines or front line and blessing, and the res mechanic, the resurrection mechanic, Surfer Global does that better.
You don't care about spending the 2 life anyway.
Yeah, no, not at all. Right. You don't care about those damage because you're aiming to win turn 3, maybe turn 4.
It has so much ramp as it is that you're probably going to get what you want when you want it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The other one to look at, of course, would be Star Labs. That global is pretty involved. You pay the bolt and the shield. You move a sidekick die from your used pile to your prep area and field another sidekick die from your used pile. So it gets something in the field, much like Ring. This one can be played on either player's turn. The drawback, of course, is that it does cost 2 energy. And since you have Parallax, you probably have it in your mind that you're going to just, re-roll certain things anyway, or use dead energy to re-roll something else anyway. But that said, it still could help because it's another way that you can get a sidekick out. And right, one problem with this, and we should have mentioned this in the weaknesses, and you did touch upon it in your description. One problem is you are relying on sidekicks, which are 1 face on 6. Now, of course, you have Faerun Under Siege Ring to help you with that, but that's 1 global and that's 1 time per turn. This does give you another option there, and it's a team full of globals anyway. I mean, let's forget about some of the other changes that we just proposed. Take out Batcave and put in Star Labs. Is it a better team?
Forgetting the other changes, I don't know. I think if you're going to substitute Star Labs in for anything, it's got to be Professor X. Because then turn 1, you can 1000 Dragon for blessing and pop Star Labs. So now you're rolling 5 and already have a sidekick. If it's anything, that's probably what I do, because then you can ring for a sidekick, pick up the front line and Surfer Global. So now you know you have both basic actions. You already have 2 sidekicks in the field. So if anything, I think Star Labs is a replacement for Professor X. I don't know that I would do it for Batcave, simply because if you Professor X to full efficiency, there's never any sidekicks in your use pile except on your opponent's turn when you're probably going to Professor X anyway. I just don't know that you gain as much combining the two as you would if you replaced it. You know, because then you're really trying to do something that's one of our favorite topics, is how do you make the game more challenging to play for your opponent? Well, take away the easy crutch of Professor X, put in Star Labs, and then your opponent's going to have to look at energy differently. They're going to have to plan differently, and that may not be something that they're prepared for. So if it's me, if I'm going to play this team with Star Labs, it'll be in place of Professor X instead of anything else.
If it was you, you would try to find a way to play this team with Beholder.
I'm a little bit in love with the common Beholder. That's true.
Hey, me too. It was on my team as well. It's a fun card.
Yeah.
You know, the only argument that I would make there for keeping Professor X with Star Labs is that I think Star Labs is what you use more on turn 3, maybe turn 2, when you have the opportunity to be rolling, you know, 6-7 dice. I certainly understand what you're saying. I see it as another way to get assured some sidekicks on those games where they don't come. But that said, it does have tools to win those games when those sidekicks don't come right away anyway, because they're going to come eventually thanks to things like Ring. They just are in Parallax. They're just going to come. So I don't know if they're necessary, or if Star Labs is necessary, that is. But certainly an option there. Other globals, I guess you could look at the zero-cost sidekick conversion ones, make a sidekick into a Bolt or a Mask or, you know, the four energy types. I don't know. The only time I see that mattering is if you somehow had, like, all 8 sidekicks in the field and all of your action dice came up action face, and you don't have any fists to make things not block with the front line, then maybe you'd want to be able to change a sidekick to have some parallax fuel. But that's a pretty convoluted scenario.
Yeah,
I don't think those matter.
Like in talking to Drusty, I'm not actually sure that he used that global very much throughout the day. Simply because, you know, you just parallax until you can overwhelm and then overwhelm.
Yep.
Like your characters are swinging for 4 or 5. It doesn't take too many of them. You know,
right.
I mean, typically you only really have to hit with 4 characters. And so just roll and they're all equal. It's not like, oh, well, chump block these, and then, you know, my opponent might chump block these, and then, only my sidekicks get through. That's all you need to get through. You just need 4 of them. So I think you're right. I think that's a little bit convoluted. I think anything that changes a character face into energy in this team is really going the wrong way.
So, absolutely.
Unless I don't know their abilities well enough at this point to know, but unless there's one of them that you know, you'd bring for the character ability as well if you're going to buy it, then, you know, maybe. But beyond that, I really know.
Not necessarily. I mean, they're all a little expensive. I guess you can make an argument for the rare Merlin, since he can only be blocked by crossover character dice. There's something big that is likely to get through. But, I mean, I think that's as... I think that's as far as it goes. I mean, it would certainly benefit from the front line, unless your opponent had a crossover die in the field. Right now, that's no big deal. And you know, Deadpool, we already know that set is going to bring more crossover characters, and I guess we could presume that this is a mechanism that we're really going to see into the future. And I'm glad. I welcome that. I'm really glad we're starting to see these dual energies be a thing, and that it's not just this set that it's going to continue. But for now, Rare Merlin, who can only be blocked by crossover character dice and has some decent stats here, 3, 4, 5. So, I mean, that's more than a sidekick. One of him is going to do, 6, 7, 8. We're talking with the front line. He's not an easy one to block. So I guess him. He gives you a bolt, though. You're going to use bolts for some other things. But at that point, presumably if you're attacking, you kind of already have those things figured out.
Yeah, I don't see it.
No. So, I mean, is there anything... I think there are things in Green Arrow Flash that make it work less well. I don't see a whole lot that makes it work better.
Right. I agree.
So... It's a cool team. We wanted to highlight it because, one, it did well in the event, and it was unique. Two, it was a well-crafted team, and we wanted to give some props to the folks who brewed it, known and unknown, if there was anybody other than just Drowsy and Tony behind it. And we hadn't done a deck tech for a little while. We want to look at these things and see how they're structured. And see what we can learn from them. You know, one way that a lot of people look at these kind of games is to immediately go for the kinds of mechanisms that have been exploitable in the past. Because if they were exploitable before, they might be exploitable again. And that's one place to look. And this is certainly one area where at times you've been able to find the right combinations that can do something wild like this. And when those things come up, I think it's very worth pointing out.
Yeah, well, so the thing that we talked about the other day is, so many times we talk about these concepts and we build a show around talking more high level, and I told you and Randy I wanted to do something nuts and bolts where we actually talk about specific cards.
Mm-hmm.
This is the team that came up, and, fortunately I had the opportunity to play against it, and... in game two, kind of play with it and use those pieces, even though I didn't bring them. It's a lot of shenanigans. It's really kind of fun. If you're locals, don't listen to the podcast or see the stuff that gets posted. I know that game was streamed. The finals was streamed with this team versus that Venom team, and Venom came out on top. So, this might be something you can catch some guys at a local shop with, on a just kind of a casual evening,
show them. Yeah, bring it in. Say, hey, check this out. This is. Look at what this is. Look at how it works. That's. Some stuff we're going to start messing around with, some teams. Some of the guys in my new developing scene are considering, boning up and getting ready for one of the WKOs in November, just to kind of see what it's like. They haven't had the chance to do that before, but all of them have some pretty good game instinct. So I think if they wanted to go, they would have a shot at doing pretty well. And so we're going to start to bring some teams and just kind of show, hey, here's how some of this stuff works, and here's some of the things that you can think about the game and ways that you can break some of the mechanisms. Yeah, just keeping the guys at your shop and gals at your shop informed as to what's going on and what's especially if you're the lead organizer at the store, it's kind of fun. Hey guys, here, check this out, play against this. I mean. And if you frame it that way, it's not going to be like, hey, come here so I can beat you in the face with this crazy team. It's, hey, here, let's check out how this works. I saw this. I haven't had the chance to play with it yet. Let's see this, because it was pretty crazy. And then it's something like, even though you're sitting across from one another playing the game, it's something still kind of unifying instead of something like, hey, come here so I can kick your butt.
Right.
Hey, you want a Hertz donut?
Ugh.
That's the ugh of someone who like had brothers and got a few Hertz donuts growing up.
No.
No?
I have a brother. He's younger.
You might have been the one giving him.
I was. Jerk. The stories we could tell.
Hey, I have a little brother myself. I completely hear you. Oh, boy. All right. Well... that brings us to the end of this episode of the Attack Zone. Thank you for listening. We know that you can spend your time in many ways, and we're truly thankful that you spend it with us. If you like what you're doing, please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcatching service you use. It helps us get the word out, and we do appreciate it. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network, Production assistance from RJ Retro. Theme music courtesy of Nine Inch Nails, shared via Creative Commons at remix.nin.com. Promotional consideration given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool every Thursday, as well as The Prep Area, which runs opposite Tuesdays of us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Cheers.
So what are some of these stories you could tell?
I put my brother's head through a wall.
What?
Yeah.
Can we keep this on the podcast?
Yeah.
Do I have to take it off?
Yeah.
Okay. Context here?
We were wrestling. We had broken our bunk beds that my dad had made for the second or third time, and so he got upset. And he brought the circular saw into our bedroom, cut the bed into little pieces, because he built it in our room, so there was no way it was coming out. He built it out of like 2x8s, right? So he took the circular saw to the bed, cut it all to pieces so he could get it out of the room, and was like, he put our mattresses on the floor, and like, you guys are sleeping on the floor. And so,
as soon as you said he brought in the circular saw, I'm thinking, my God, what is about to happen?
So, I mean, and like, it was seriously the third or fourth time we had broken the bed and he had to repair it. And he was just like, I built this thing out of, you know, like construction lumber, and you guys still found it. We're just kids. I mean, I couldn't have been beyond middle school. But so we're wrestling, and the mattresses, the two twin mattresses are side by side. And we're just like, are you kidding me? We've got a wrestling mat. This is perfect. One is in the corner of the room and the other one's right beside it. And we're wrestling, we're, you know, just roughhousing. There's 18 months between us, 19 months between us, so fairly close in age. But I'm a lot bigger than my brother, and I give him a shove, and his foot went between the two mattresses, and he tripped, and his head just hit the wall and went right through. It wasn't a drywall wall. We had a really, really old house, and so it was plaster and lath. And his head went right through the wall, huge hole. So we got a thumping for that one pretty good. Another time we're wrestling and I got him in a chokehold and I choked him out, knocked him out. I got terrified when that one happened, 'cause I was like, wait, did I just kill my brother? You know, like,
oh my gosh.
But there's only ever really one punch thrown between us, and mm-hmm. I threw it. I mean, he dropped to the ground, because I there's some lead up to the story. I was pissed at him. We were at our friend's house and he had wrecked our dirt bike or something. I don't remember what happened, but I was mad at him and I charged him, and like, I was in high school at this point, and so I was kind of like awkward. I was lumbering at him more than anything, and he just kind of sidestepped me like ole and threw me to the ground like three times. And finally, the third time, I got up and I was so mad. I was so embarrassed because he had done this in front of our friends. So I decked him and I dropped him right to the ground with a right hook. And so now he's got a fat lip, a bloody nose, and he looks at me from the ground and he starts to laugh and he says, "What are we going to tell mom?" So yeah, those are the stories of me fighting my brother.
My brother and I certainly had some roughhousing things, though I never put him through a wall. But my stuff was more psychological. I think a lot of kids do this kind of thing. Like, I convinced him when he was just getting old enough to like maybe take out a bag of trash to the garbage cans out back, and our house, the front yard was level, then you go down a hill and then the backyard was level, but it was a decently steep hill. Like, we would sled down this when we were little. Actually, we built jumps out of snow for our sleds to go through, and that was kind of awesome. Like, we use the plastic sheet sleds, which are actually the best things ever. Those things fly. But in any case, I told him that the last time, my last little brother,
Oh my gosh.
A lot of good brother, right? Yeah. Oh, a lot of good brother stories start with my last little brother. My last little brother got killed and eaten by a beast called the Zontar that lived over our back hill. So he better be careful when he's taking the garbage out at night. Zontar, of course, is something that I think Spaceman Spiff, like, it's from a Calvin and Hobbes strip. So that's where I got that word. But yeah, I told him that my last little brother got killed and eaten going in the backyard at night, so he better watch out. And yeah, so a little more psychological there.
That's brutal. I never did that to my
brother. You put your brother through a wall and punched him in the face.
And I knocked him out.
My minor psychological torture, and you choked him out. And my minor psychological torture is brutal.
You ask him though; those things made him stronger. He wouldn't be the man he is today without me. I can say all that because there's no chance he's ever going to listen to this podcast.